I'm here at the MHAX Hackathon, and we're talking to a team that just built an application on Microsoft Azure. Ladies, please tell me your names.
Janae Hoyle.
Kristen Law.
Abrovella.
Xyla Foxlin.
And tell me about the application you built.
All right, so we were all winners of the National Center for Women in Information Technology Aspirations in Computing Awards, so we really believe that getting women involved in STEM, especially at a young age, is really important, and it's also very lacking in our society today.
I agree.
So we've built a web application that's aimed at elementary school girls, where they go through the story of the Wizard of Oz, and through that story, they learn about all sorts of different robotic applications and, you know, robots.
Okay. And you built it. Tell me the technologies you used building this thing.
Sorry, what was the question?
What are the technologies that went into building this application?
Okay. So we used JavaScript for a lot of the functionality throughout the website, and then we used HTML and CSS to do the actual static web pages, and just a lot of Photoshop and stuff for the graphics, and a lot of video editing for the videos that we took to demonstrate concepts to the girls.
So there's a video. I noticed that you had some videos hosted online. Where are the videos hosted?
YouTube.
On YouTube. Yeah. And where's the web application hosted?
Microsoft
Azure. Okay. Tell me, what was the biggest technical challenge in getting this thing out?
Biggest technical challenge for me was we used GitHub to share our repository, so that was huge.
Those merge conflicts.
Yep, merge conflicts, and also JavaScript, because I did a lot of JavaScript.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And you guys met through this contest? Through being the winners of...
Yes.
Oh, tell me really quickly about that.
Okay, so NCWIT is an award for aspirations in computing that helps.
The WIT is Women in Technology?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this award helps support high school girls who are interested in pursuing computing. So it awards them for what they've achieved thus far in their high school careers, as well as what they aspire to do in kind of really any aspect of computing. It tends to be computer science, but there are several engineers as well in this program. So we've all been recognized for our own academic achievements, as well as extracurricular, community, and our future dreams and passions that we have in technology and computing.
Okay. And the app is called Ozbot. Where do you find it online? Where do you find this app online?
You can find it at ozbot.azurewebsites.net.
Excellent. Ladies, thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm here at MHAX with the award-winning creators of Pong with Me. How you guys doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, what's your name?
Thanks for having us.
Dominic Davis.
Haytham Maya.
Akshay Chawani.
All right, tell me about this game you guys built.
So the concept of Pong with Me is based on the concept of human interaction with technology, using technology to build relationships with your friends, family, or even complete strangers. Hmm. And so the concept of the game is to use your phones, smartphones, tablets, pretty much anything that has a browser and a gyroscope in it, to use that phone, that device, as a physical paddle, and to play Pong on a tablet or TV or practically any screen.
That sounds a little scary. I'm picturing ping pong balls hitting off of my phone. Now, it's all virtual, right?
What?
It's all virtual.
All virtual.
About the technology you guys used to create this thing.
So the technology we used is we use something called Socket.io with Node.js. This basically allows us for basically virtually flawless interaction between the phones and the tablet or TV screen in the middle. It looks like basically it's magic. This virtual magic looks, everything is screeniness and everything looks perfect.
Mm-hmm. And you have a client application as well, right? Something running on the phone?
Yes, indeed. We actually do have a client-side application, and that application occurs when after we opened up our server port. That's when the client-side application is loaded, side-loaded onto the phone, and that's with that you can actually control the paddle.
All right. What's the server you're using?
The server we're using is Node.js deployment on a Microsoft Azure Enterprise server. Okay. This allows us to have high volume, very fast computational speeds. It was very easy to set up. It also is quite secure. So what we did is we deployed our Node.js server on the Azure cloud. And after we did that, we basically initialized the Node.js server. We initialized the socket.io binary streams. And then whenever a client connects to our server, we basically open up a port. That port is dynamically generated into a website. that website is generated into a, it's turned into a QR code, which is then rendered, which you can then take a picture of that QR code with your screen, and that it basically connects your phone with our server, and that enables the binary stream between the two.
I see. Very cool. Can anybody play this game? If they're watching, can they go to a URL and start playing?
Of course. This game is completely platform agnostic. As long as you have a gyroscope on your phone to allow it to tilt back and forth, you're good to go.
How do they get started? Where do they go?
They go to pongwithme@azurewebsites.net.
Basically, it's a free platform. We put it on Microsoft Azure. You guys are going to love it. Take care.
All right, great. Thanks a lot, guys. And congratulations on winning the best use of Microsoft technology here at MHAX.
Thank you.
We're here at MHAX, and I'm talking to a team of developers. What's your names?
Han.
Angel.
Nick.
Tell me about this app you built. Go
ahead. The app we built was called Cool It. It's designed to help measure heat dissipation in different systems that include motors and transformers and power supplies. So we tried to make it as basic as possible for people who aren't fully educated in their system and would like it to last longer and to help avoid burnouts in the system. So we asked simple questions to help give us information that we can use in our calculators and our equations, and then we can provide you recommendations based on what you tell us.
Cool. So the practical use is that if you've bought some equipment, it's in a box, and you don't want it to get too hot, that it'll actually burn out the equipment.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say, for example, you have a brand new house, right?
Yeah.
So you have a wind turbine to save energy in this brand new house. And this wind turbine is powered by a motor when there's no wind. So inside this mechanical enclosure, there's going to be a lot of electronics that you may or may not know how to manipulate. So basically what we're doing is, this is an app tailored for engineers and non-engineers who own high-tech engineering equipment. So inside this box, there's going to be a lot of electronics that tend to heat up, and like when there's temperature, the temperature's really high outside, they might even burn out, end up ruining your investment. Mm. So the front end of this application is as simple as possible in order for anybody from a 10-year-old to a mechanical engineer to be able to answer the questions. And with the physics equations we have in the back end, we calculate the temperature inside your mechanical enclosure compared to the one outside using APIs, and then deliver to the user the best possible solution in order for you not to ruin your investment.
Okay, and so are all the calculations, are they done on the device itself, on the phone, or are they done out in the cloud somewhere?
Most of them are done on the devices itself, but we have used API for the temperature, and I think so.
We use API for the temperature. We used an API to gather information from each person that uses it in order for us to be able to do research on it and like better it in the future. So basically, all of the programming for the mathematical equations, it's in the back end of the application. That's part of the app.
All right. And you've got three apps, an Android app, an iPhone app, and a Windows Phone app. Is that right?
We have an iPhone app that is also iPad and iPhone.
Yep.
And we have a Windows phone.
Oh, okay, so two apps. All right. Let's see the Windows phone. You got it right here. Can you show it?
Okay, yeah.
Right up here?
So let me show the icon real quick.
Yep.
So the beta version of this is called Mech App, but the app is called Cool It. So it's the sprocket that's kind of blue with a white background. So when we navigate into this application, the first thing it's going to ask you is simple questions. It's going to ask you, what units are you working on? Is your enclosure painted or not? And it's going to ask you if it's indoor or outdoor. Let's say we use USA units, which are English units. It's outdoors, and our enclosure is painted. So then it'll ask you for the surface area of it. It'll just like ask you for the dimensions, and then the app will calculate the surface area. So let's say it's 48 inches high, 36 inches in length, and then 60 inches in width. Then it'll ask you, which part of your electronic device, your mechanical enclosure, is not allowing heat dissipation. So this is basically when these boxes are like sitting on the ground or a corner to a wall, well, that part of the box that is in that corner is not allowing heat to be dissipated outside.
Right.
So that part of the surface area must be subtracted from it.
Got it.
So you just mark down it's the front and it's the bottom. And then with APIs.
Let's move to the end here. So you get the temperature from an API.
Yep.
And
yep,
then
yep.
At the end, it's going to give you some advice.
The end is going to give you this output result right here.
So you're inputting the outside temperature and some inside temperature, if you know
it'll say, due to the maximum possible temperature, 94 degrees Fahrenheit, the area of the enclosure to be cut out for a ventilation system should be 4.14 square inches. So it'll let you know what you have to do in
order.
So you
give me some recommendation there.
It gives you recommendations and also options as to how would you proceed in making your ventilation system if you do not know how to do it.
Outstanding. Yet. Will this app be in the App Store soon?
Hopefully it'll be on the Windows Store in the next week.
Okay.
And also the iPhone Store as well.
All right, we'll look for that. Before we go, let's give a shout-out to your team member who's not here right now. What's his name?
Okay, so our team member who's not here right now, his name is James Harnett. He is a junior at high school. He was basically our iOS guide for most of the application. And a really talented young kid with a really bright future. And we were really glad to work with him at MHACS. We're all sophomores at Michigan. And we got to participate with a high schooler as well. And it was a blast.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
We're at MHACS, and I'm talking with Thomas Reese. How you doing, Thomas?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. What'd you build this weekend?
All right, so this weekend we built a smart connected smoke alarm, much like the likes that comes out of Nest at Google, except a tenth the price, that could retrofit any smoke alarm in the world.
Now, what makes it smart?
What makes it smart is that it's Wi-Fi connected. It's got several additional sensors on it that can track data, push that to the cloud, and then track that all over time, which gives you additional information. On top of that, anytime there is, we detect when the fire alarm starts going off.
Okay, that's based the garbage in. That's the fire alarm going off.
Right. Once we have that, we then will send out a message using the Twilio API.
Garbage out.
Right. Which then will trigger any device that's been registered with that. And we have an Android, Windows 8, and iOS platforms. We're on all three.
So your device... the information is coming in from the smoke alarm saying,
right,
beep, 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 fire the house. It's sending something to Twilio. Twilio was talking to the phones?
Right. So we're using that to go through, regardless of platform, it'll still make it.
Okay.
All of the apps are native.
Okay. But they're getting their information. So it's just relaying some message down to those apps.
Right.
And a native app on each phone is going to pick it up.
Right. So once it sees that there's an incoming message, it knows the phone number to expect it from. We're just going through one standard number. We could change that up in the future, but for us it's a good way to generalize things.
Okay, so I see the big use case is that I'm out at a party and all of a sudden my phone, I get a message on my phone, your house is on fire.
Right.
Is there more than that?
Well, there's a lot more than that. All right, so the way that it works is when it gets the message, it immediately opens the app up, mm-hmm, and then it will show you a page that says this is a false alarm, or...
How would I know it's a false alarm?
So it's for the user to input.
Or
call 911, and then there's a slight delay so that it won't immediately happen in case you're taking it out of your pocket or whatever, you're fumbling with it and accidentally hit the wrong thing. And, you know, 3 seconds won't usually make the difference. On top of that, as soon as that's done, there's an option to select whether or not you're safe. So if you do happen to hit call 911, mm-hmm, and you're in, let's say you're in the fire.
And trapped, yeah.
Right. Then you want everyone else in your circle that's registered with the device to know that there's, right,
safe.
And that can help firefighters, anyone, first responders. On top of that, when it does first happen, we have two rounds of contacts. So we have the first round, which would be family or anyone that lives in the home, and that all of them get the notification, and all of them can individually respond,
mm-hmm,
and then it will go into different modes depending on how the responses work. And then once someone, if someone does say there's a live fire going on, it will then forward them to call 911 and text all of the surrounding people, including neighbors and anyone else who may have
it. Very cool. You built three separate native apps, or did you use some sort of cross-platform
tool? Nope, we used three separate native apps. We had three different people, each work on one.
Okay. What was the biggest challenge this step?
For the whole project?
Yeah.
For the whole project, I'd say that one of the large challenges was just getting everything to work. We had cobbled together a bunch of microcontrollers that, we didn't get the best to pick from.
Okay.
So that was one. And then getting up and going on all different platforms. Each of the three guys that worked on it were all new to each one. So then the two of us that were a little more advanced and had done all of it before had to help pitch in and try to connect everything up and make sure that the API and everything was talking nice and fluidly between all of them.
Excellent. Thomas, thanks a lot.
Yeah, nice meeting you.
I'm here at MHACS, and we're with a team here that built a cool app. Before we start, tell us your names.
Akshay.
Eric.
Enzi.
Grace.
Who's there?
Tell me about your app.
So essentially what we built is a Kickstarter for books. We really wanted to democratize the experience of being able to choose which books you want to see funded and see choose which books you want to see published as well.
Who's the audience for this?
So the audience for this is any reader, really. Eric can talk more about who the audience is.
Yeah, so books like Harry Potter, they're books that were turned down dozens of times by publishers. We want to make a market for those books where authors haven't been able to tap into the market yet, haven't been able to find a publisher to pick them up. So we let authors publish the first chapter of their book on our website. Readers get to read the first chapter for free. If they like it, they can help fund the cost of writing the book or publishing the book.
So I'm hearing there's two audiences. There's the authors who want to be able to publish their books, and there's the audience that want to get good books exposed to them, right? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me a little about some of the technologies used in this.
All right. So for the basic website structure, main website, we use HTML and CSS, and we have Grace over here take charge of most graphic design part, the user interface. And we have, for the back side, we have PHP.
We have Ruby on Rails, and we're hosting it on Microsoft's Azure platform.
All right, so I work for Microsoft. So why'd you pick Azure?
To be honest, Azure was one of the sponsors. Okay. So I figured that, you know, MX is a great event. Might as well try and help out one of their sponsors.
Okay, I'd be interested to see how that works for you. How that goes. What was the biggest challenge that you guys had?
Really, designing a website, a functional website within 36 hours. It's obviously a huge challenge, especially since we wanted to do a lot of user design. User experience, and a lot of back-end material.
And is this online right now?
Yes.
What's the URL?
Yep, it's online. It's pulpfiction.me.
Pulpfiction.me.
Pulpfiction.me, yep.
All right.
That's right.
All right, guys, thanks a lot.
Yep.
And enjoy the hackathon. Yep. See ya. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Shake everybody's hands.
Absolutely.
Yep. Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
I'm here at MHAX with Matt Favero. Matt, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. You had a really cool demo this year. We're not going to show the demo, but look, we have a piece of hardware here. And tell us about it.
Yeah, so this is the Oculus Rift. And what we did at this hackathon is we made combined the Oculus Rift and Microsoft Kinect V2. We made a way for you to feel like you're in the same room as somebody else without having to physically be in that room. So it projects you virtually into our virtual world, and two people live in 3D feel like they're right next to each other.
So the idea would be that I would have on my Oculus Rift actively facing me, picking up my movements, and you would have yours on with you being out in California. So
exactly.
On a beach in Mexico.
Yeah, exactly. Or the moon.
Yeah.
So what this is it's a display, and it tracks your head. So if I put this on, and I have it connected to my computer, I can be in a totally different place than where I am right now. Once you put this on and have some headphones, well, then you can transport you into an office, or the beach, or the moon, or whatever. And then using the Kinect, we can have your friends join you too, so it's not like you're leaving reality. You're actually just going to a different place.
So is that the core use case? This is just virtual meetings?
Virtual meetings are definitely one of the cool applications we see of this, but also it would just be good to connect friends and family, and, you know, there's probably a lot of other applications with educational uses. You know, a teacher might want to lecture their students, and obviously students like to sleep in. Maybe they can just lie in their bed, put on their Oculus Rift, they could have front row seats to the lecture, or a comedy show, or a music performance, or whatever.
Nice. Tell me a little bit about the technology. So you had the hardware was the Oculus Rift, you had the Kinect.
Yeah, so there's a Kinect SDK and there's a Unity SDK. They're both integrated with this engine called Unity.
And we use a gaming engine.
Yeah, it's a gaming engine, and we used it for basically a non-gaming social application. On the back end, we're using C# to write everything, and then we're running a Windows server so that when one person with one Kinect is sending their data and being recorded, it goes to a central server, which then forwards it to one other person or many people using the network protocol that we wrote.
So it's not just HTTP, it's
No, yeah, it's using UDP, and we wrote our own protocol to basically send image and video and depth separately, send them over the internet, and then when they arrive at the destination, they are stitched back together. They make basically a 3D person that you can stand next to.
You wrote your own protocol. That is hard.
Yeah, it's very cool. So that's what we did it.
Excellent. Yeah. How'd you do with the hackathon? I saw you up on stage, you got to demo it to the crowd.
Yeah, so we were able to get into the top 10, and we got to demo it to 1,000 people or so. So it was really cool. And great opportunity, great experience. It's the first big hackathon I've ever been to. So
congratulations.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.